Before we start the show, just wanted to let you know that Garden Fork now has a t-shirt and sweater shop. Very exciting, isn't it? There'll be a link in the show notes here to the show. If you want like a hoodie or a sweater or a t-shirt, that is now a real thing. All right, links to that stuff are in the show notes. Here we go. Hey, welcome. This is Garden Fork Radio. Thanks for downloading the show. My name is Eric. I have this eclectic DIY YouTube channel and podcast. You're listening to the podcast. The YouTube channel is on youtube.com/gardenfork. And this show is me and my friends talking about interesting things. It's the beginning of January here. And my friend Will Wallace from the Weekend Homestead is here. Hello, sir.
How are you doing today, sir?
I'm good. I haven't had any caffeine. I'm trying to reduce the amount of what's called lip smack that is in the podcast recording from my end. And evidently dairy, having like milk in your tea, contributes to that. So I didn't have any caffeine and I didn't have any milk today. I just have a glass of water here.
So my three bowls of Lucky Charms before we got on the call today is not a good idea.
I just drank water. We'll see. I mean, you kind of have that magic radio voice, so.
Perfect. All right. Well, I'm excited.
So today we were going to talk about cabins, building cabins in the woods and construction projects gone awry and the tension with that, and then move on to making dog treats.
Construction of a cabin in the woods. I'm guessing you're probably asking about the cabin that I've been posting on our blog on Facebook about the Pinecone Camp project.
Right. All of a sudden there's this building in the woods, and Will owns a large piece of property. And I'm like, I thought you already had a cabin.
So yes, I have a cabin in the woods. Let's rewind time back to when I was a kid. I was the kid who would go in the woods and build tree forts and kind of stuff. And, you know, it's so on. So my wife actually jokes and says that this project that I'm working on in the woods is just a glorified version of the same kind of forts I used to build as a kid. So she's probably right.
I actually, one of the first forts I built was out of pallets, believe it or not.
Really?
And that was back when there wasn't the internet. So I didn't know that other people were building things out of pallets. I just saw these pallets up behind a store and I'm like, you could build walls with those. And so I built a little, it wasn't a very big fort. I was more into building it than using it, but it was like a little, I don't know. I mean, if you found it in the woods, you'd expect to find a hobbit in it or something, but yeah, I built a pallet fort.
Yeah. There was a lot of forts and, you know, running around and playing capture the flag and that kind of stuff when I was growing up. So I think this is just the adult version of it with a little bit nicer furniture.
Yeah, we were allowed basically after school to go into it. We lived around woods and fields and stuff, and we just had to be home by dinner. And nowadays, you can't do that.
Yeah, that was kind of our thing, too. You know, we knew where we were going. You know, we'd get done with school, everybody would go home and change out of their uniforms and then get on their bikes, and we'd all rally at the soccer field. And next thing you know, we were in the woods doing whatever. So,
yeah, or we'd go fishing or hunting as well. Or, I guess when you're in the woods, you're kind of hunting anyway. So,
yeah.
And nowadays, you can't do that with children, unfortunately.
Yeah, just drop the kids off at the park. Here you go. See you guys later.
Yeah,
be
really.
Back in 3 hours.
So the cabin, which I think a lot of people could build on in their land. You know, you just don't tell the town. That's the big secret, I think. But was that stick built or was that pre-made?
Perfect question. First off, full disclosure, the cabin itself, the outside frame, is one of those kits. So it's, you know, where you're driving down the road and you see them on the side of the road and they have them pre-built and they can deliver them on a machine. And I wanted to get one of those to try it out to see, you know, how they were and everything like that. And in our township, there's a rule that states that if you have a building that's less than 100 square feet, you can build it legally on your property. So what we did was we ordered one that was 8x12 in size. And I thought, well, let's figure out a cool way to get this back in the woods. When the delivery guy showed up with it, he looked at me and he's like, where are we putting this thing? Thinking it was right by the road. And I said, no, we're going about a half mile back into the woods there. I brought my tractor and equipment, and we spent the next probably about 45 minutes, you know, basically moving this structure through the woods on this trail that I had created to get it back to the location. And then we leveled it up and got it all set there. And then we were trying to think of, okay, you know, we thought of it being kind of a little fort in the woods that we could go out and hang out at and store some stuff at this place we call Pinecone Camp, which is literally just a small camp area on our property to, you know, have a campfire and be out in the woods and everything. We thought having a little building out there would be cool. Well, the little building kind of grew into its own thing, which is like anything else that I do. It starts out small and ends up being the Taj Mahal. So,
so it was, I mean, I've seen them in Pennsylvania and in Connecticut where we drive around, and it's usually on a county road or a state highway, not the interstates, but there'll be a piece of land with a bunch of different, they look like sheds or little garages or garden sheds. Some of them are look like a kid's playhouse. And it's kind of like a tiny house in a way.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, that I mean, my buddy Todd and I, who we do a lot of construction work together, talked about it, and we sat down, and I don't think that I could have built it cheaper than what they do, because they build these in a factory,
right?
You know, climate control, they've got all their tools and stuff set up so they can just crank these things out one after another. You only get a couple choices, like, hey, here's a couple colors, here's a couple roofing materials and so on. You can't really get very custom with them. But for a person who wants to get a building on their property, having one of these structures built, and then they just deliver it, and they have a little, I don't know how to describe it. It looks like a little mini forklift with big knobby tires on it. Yep. And they literally just pick it up and put a little cart on it and just roll it to wherever you want, set it down, and boom, you've got a building. And it was, for the amount that we spent on that building in comparison to building it, it was almost the same price. And I didn't have any time other than the phone call I had with the guy and the day they delivered it.
Yeah, I look at those and I think it'd be fun to drop one on my property as like a little office. But then I remind myself that I already complain about being lonely as it is. So being a YouTuber is kind of lonely. So you're always by yourself. And then I want to be in the woods by myself. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'll just hang out at the coffee shop instead.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of what this has become. This is kind of a remote location to get away to. We've got a little kitchen area in there and a little wood stove and couch and a little loft bed area. And it's a little mini tiny house. And I'll be honest with you, it was actually one of the most interesting builds that I worked on in the last year, just because everything had to be small. So when you build something big, it's really easy because you can just buy a door that fits, or you can just buy a cabinet that fits. When you're building stuff that's tiny, everything has to be thought through of like, okay, well, how am I going to get this in there? How am I going to move that? You know, I only have this amount of distance, you know, trying to get the distances for a wood stove in there and then have the right amount of material on the wall to protect for fire rating and everything like that. It was a lot of thinking, engineering, and Excel spreadsheets to actually get it to go, but it definitely turned out well.
And that wood stove is really cool. It's like the mini me of wood stoves.
Yes, that's I've gotten, out of all of the things I posted this year, that item got the most traffic and most questions out of it. I think in the first 48 hours, we had like 40,000 hits between the three posts that I had on that stove. I mean, it's from a company called Tiny Wood Stoves. I'm not here to plug the company. They're not sponsored or anything like that. But I found this, and what people use it for is actually when you build a real tiny home, or if you have an RV or something like that, and, you know, you see them up in the mountains in Colorado or something like that, they always have a little wood stove in there, and that's the little wood stove that they put in there.
And it'll burn like a 8-inch log, or?
You can fit, they say 8-inch, but it doesn't fit. I take basically a 16-inch log or a 20-inch log, and I cut it into, you know, three or four parts and just have kind of chunks that I put in there. It works really, really well actually for us, because we process a lot of firewood, and then there's always all these chunks and scraps and oddball sizes that are kind of hard to pile. So we threw them all in a bucket, and that's what I burn in there. And it actually works out really, really well for us. But the hard part about that stove, more than anything else, is the temperature, because you're either cold or it's 85 or 90 degrees inside the building, because there's really, once that cast iron gets hot, it's hard to slow the freight train down. I had all the windows open and doors open when I was trying to finish some stuff up on some trim work in there, and I had the wood stove going, and I was in a t-shirt, my jacket and everything was all piled outside because, you know, it was 90 degrees inside the building with all the windows open.
That's interesting, the freight train analogy, because actually, like my steam boiler in Brooklyn here, it's a steam radiator system. And once you get that thing up to power, full heat, it's once you get the steam generating and you turn off, the thermostat turns off, the steam doesn't stop. It'll take like 20 minutes for that thing to wind its way down. So you're actually shooting past your ideal temperature. So it's a bit of a yo-yo. I mean, my building's well insulated now, so it's better insulated. But man, that thing gets hot.
Yeah. The big one for us was figuring out, you know, you have to, no matter if the space is small or not, you still have to have the setbacks for the stovepipe and everything else. So there was a lot of figuring and planning. And actually the other interesting one about the structure is you have to be very, very careful on what you're working on to make sure that you have the right tools, because you can't just take your air hammer and the compressor and just throw it on the floor, because there's no room to walk then.
Right.
So you have to bring in whatever project you're doing, you do the project and you take it back out and add in the complexity that it's a half a mile back in the woods. So now if you forgot some nails, you can't just walk over to your workbench and grab them and put them in there. You've got a 20-minute ride back down to the house or the cabin, grab the stuff and then go back up. So you got really, really good at thinking through your projects, going in, doing this little micro project and then bouncing back out. And it was actually, I think working on a bigger space is way easier and faster than working on a tiny space.
And we've talked a lot about solar before, but the whole thing is solar powered as well.
Correct. I actually did, let's just geek for 2 seconds on it. I did a test this last week and I posted it online, I think on Monday. I turned all the lights on. It has a forced air furnace inside of it, which that's a whole nother conversation. All the lights, ceiling fan, the forced air furnace, the outbuildings, everything was turned on. And then I put this device in called a kilowatt, which measures the amount of power. And all said and done, the entire structure, all of the building, all the stuff uses a total of 137 watts of power. So it's just a little bit more than a 100-watt light bulb to keep the whole thing running.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So that was my crown accomplishment out of all of it, is taking all my solar stuff and figuring out a way to use 12-volt devices and things like that that are built for the automotive industry and build them into this property.
Is the electric furnace 12-volt or 120?
No, the furnace is a gas forced air furnace that runs on propane.
Oh.
If you've ever seen those vans that drive down the road, the VW van that turns into a little bit of a camper.
Yep.
A lot of the models have this short furnace. It's about 12 inches long and it's 9 by 9 in size. So it's very compact and it's a small forced air furnace that you vent outside. Well, I took that same technology and then figured out a way to build a 12-volt hub inside of the building that the furnace runs off of. And there's a thermostat on the wall. So you just walk in and turn on the thermostat and the furnace kicks on, blows hot air. When it gets to a certain temperature, it turns off and so on. So wow. If you ever just want to take the chill off, you can just run that and it thinks that it's inside of a van, but in all reality, it's inside of a building.
That's amazing. I love 12 volt.
The coolest one is the lights. There's these little strip lights that have all these LEDs that are glued to them. And it looks like a ribbon that you'd wrap a present with.
Yes.
And you can cut it to any length. There's actually spots on the thing where it has little marks, where it has this little image of a scissors. And you just make the length of whatever you want and then cut it. So what we made was a little trim piece around the whole ceiling and then put that in there. And that's the light that lights up most of the building. And it takes no power at all. I mean, I've got 45 days of light power out there, you know, with leaving the lights on all day long without even thinking about it.
I was thinking about doing that in my basement here in Brooklyn. The walls and ceiling, it's a finished basement pretty much. But they have these really ugly lights. The guy I bought it from put these ugly lights down the center of it. And I hate ceiling lights anyway, but I thought about building a little piece of cove or maybe using a piece of prefab molding and laying in LEDs to bounce off the ceiling and then you'd have like a diffuse reflected light.
Exactly. That's all we did. We took a 1x1 or a 2x2, you know, and ran it through the router and just notched out a little square out of the piece, and then ran the light track inside of there, and then just tacked it to the wall, and it reflects up off the ceiling and into the space. I mean, I think you can get the light kit. I thought we paid like $20 and I got, you know, 40 some feet of it or whatever. So it's really inexpensive and it's super bright.
Wow, that'd be a good project. I have the ceiling torn open right now because I'm insulating all the steam pipes.
Do you guys have problems with the steam pipes where you get condensation on them in the summertime and they drip on top of the ceiling, or is it just to keep them warmer?
We get that problem happens with the hot water. No, the cold water. One of the water pipes in my basement in Colebrook, because my basement in Colebrook is just kind of a mess. But those pipes sweat, and if you insulate those, they actually will not sweat anymore. So,
good to know.
I don't. Yeah, the steam pipes are kind of indestructible until you want to open one up. Hey, real quick here. I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast app, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right. Thank you. So this kind of segues into the nightmare of projects going awry, and you just finished a giant project over at the camping resort.
Yes, I did. I think this project actually took some off my life. There was a couple points where it was really hard to keep going on it. What we did was we dug in all of the utilities for the 30 campsites on the expansion we're doing on the south of the property. So that's all the electric, the water, the sewer, the cable TV, all the transformers, the pedestals, the ped boxes, all those little green boxes you see out for all the service stuff. All of that stuff had to be put in. And to make it challenging, because of course I like challenging things, we did it in the middle of winter, which in some cases it was good, but most cases it was a nightmare. And that was a project that, you know, there were days where we had to stop work because it was 15 below outside and we just couldn't get the equipment running. That's how cold it was here, because it wasn't supposed to get that cold until January. And instead we got it in November when we had this planned.
So, and that's the kind of thing where you can't just put it down and walk away.
Nope. That probably honestly was the hardest part, was knowing that the next day that I woke up, I'd be right back into it again. And when you're standing in a trench that's, you know, 4 feet deep, everything is frozen. You take your gloves off to do something, your hands freeze and you put them back in your pockets. And that's the hard part about it is like you get 10 of these done and you want to give high fives. And then you look to the right and you see there's another, you know, 400 feet of trench there that you have to go fill in. It was just the scale of it was big. At one point in time, I had 19 people working out on the property, which is stressful all of its own.
Well, just managing that in the middle of summer, 19 people is, yeah.
It always seemed too that the one person that we were waiting on was the person who wasn't there. You know, it's odd to say that, but like the guys for the plumbing who were doing the sewer lines for us, because this is a commercial project, so I can't necessarily do it myself. But what I can do myself is manage the whole thing, manage materials, all that kind of stuff to control the cost on it. But I have to have licensed plumbers to do this, as example, or licensed electricians to do this, which I am not. And so like the plumber, the sewer guys would finish what they were doing, and then we ran out of sand. Well, it was too cold to truck sand that day. So then I had to send everybody home because we had to wait till it warmed up above 20 degrees. Otherwise, if you put sand inside of a truck box and they drive down the road, it would freeze, and then we couldn't get it out of the truck when it got to the site.
Right.
So it was things like that where you'd be cruising along and everything would be great. And then you run out of a material, or a fitting is short, or we had a pallet of pipes show up and they had a bunch of cracks in them. So then they had to send them back, and we had to wait a week to get new ones. It was that type of thing over and over and over again. And we'd start at 5:30 in the morning and work until dark, which is usually about 6 o'clock at night. So it was 12-hour days. And then when we would leave, I'd go home and do all the paperwork to get ready for the next day, or the orders, or answer the emails, or whatever it was. So it was probably the toughest thing I've ever done. And it took about 35 days to do.
Will you do it? Would you do that again?
Never, never again. We did it this way because we got kind of trapped in a situation where we had a contract with a certain individual to get this project started back in August. Actually, if you follow us on Instagram and Facebook, a lot of people saw progress through the summer of this expansion, and then it just stopped. Well, we had a, I don't want to say a worker's strike, but we had an individual who, the plumber who was managing the project for the excavation side of it, no-showed, and then we had to wait till the contract was complete before the next person could legally take it according to state law. So we waited, got it taken care of. Well, then there was a delay on their side, which then put us into the end of October, not knowing that a giant snowstorm and frigid ice-cold temperatures were coming in November, which was definitely not normal for here.
Yeah, the weather is the thing that can just whack you.
Yep. And it just... I'll say this too, and I mean, even when the project was done, I talked about this at one point in time online, but you know, there's a, I don't want to say project depression, but there's a point in time where it's really hard to get out of the funk. And then even when the project's done, you'd think there'd be a pile of relief, but I just haven't kicked the funk of, you know, getting through this. And I'm trying to get back onto it, and I'm not here to bring everybody down or anything like that, but there's times when you work on projects and get into things, and I don't want to say it was over my head, but definitely it was something that wasn't expected. And then to have it drone on as long as it was challenging to do. And that can happen with any project, small or big, if you're working on something on your house or whatever, and all of a sudden you open a wall and now you've got a giant sewer project you have to work on because you thought you were just going to put in an outlet, you know.
Yeah.
That stuff happens and it can get to you. I mean, it's a stressful thing on your relationship. It's a stressful thing on you. And it's just kind of a hard thing to work through.
Yeah, I've melted into the basement floor several times on projects, literally crying on the floor.
I will tell you, it's okay to do that. You know, there was many of times where I'm riding in the car home from the resort in silence, just enjoying the fact that no one's talking to me or yelling at me or disappointed about something, because everybody's passionate about getting their jobs done. But that definitely boils over to tempers and arguments. And we definitely had a lot of suggestive language thrown around at the property between the people, and just trying to get everybody to get along so we can get this thing done in miserable conditions.
Actually, crying is a physical release of mental, I don't know if the word is tension, but mental angst and anxiety. So it's okay to cry.
You know, the funny thing is I was, you know what else helps? Talking to somebody about it. Like, yes. I remember there was a day that I called you and I sent you a text, I think, after it, because I don't think you got a word in edgewise.
I haven't sent you the bill for that yet.
But talking about it and just, I don't know, venting, but I think that day was the day that we found out that the risers that they put in at the property were the wrong ones, and we had to dig up a whole bunch of work and redo it. And I was literally ready to snap, and I called Eric on the way home and just started yapping about, I don't even remember, whatever it was. And it just felt like this release happened. And sometimes it's good to just call a buddy or talk to somebody about, you know, what's going on, and just saying, hey, here's what I've gotten. You know, it affects the DIY world. It affects construction projects and that kind of stuff. It's not just hey, I'm in an office and I've got a spreadsheet I got to get done for my boss. I mean, those stresses are everywhere in the world. You just got to kind of figure out how to work through them, and having support from people is always good.
Yeah, so go talk to your friend. Don't necessarily medicate with alcohol, because alcohol is a depressant. And if you're depressed, and you're going to be even more depressed when you have alcohol. So careful with that.
Yep.
All right, so something more fun and positive. I made some dog treats, and I made a video about it.
Those things look darn good. I'd have to say I'd actually probably eat one.
You have to watch the video to see what happens. Does Eric eat a dog treat or not? You'll have to wait to the end of the video to see that. But they were from Nick Vulgaris, I think everyone is saying. He has a bakery in, I think it's up in upstate New York. It's called the Berker Family Farm, Berker Family Bakery Book. I'm ruining that. I'll put it in the show notes here. I also gave him a shout out in the video as well. But, you know, dog treats are, the original recipe was for gluten-free flour. And I'm like, well, my dogs don't have a gluten intolerance. So I just made it with whole wheat flour and it worked quite fine. And I've actually read a couple places online. Of course, you've read it online, so I don't know how true it is, but I think there were respectable news outlets that this whole thing with grain allergies and dogs might have been cooked up as a just a marketing thing to sell people a different kind of dog food.
The question I have is like, how do they figure it out? Like, I hate to say it, but when we had dogs, my dog would go in the backyard and eat unsavory things all the time.
Yeah.
And is he getting sick from that or is he getting sick from his dog food? You know, that's how do you figure that out?
Well, you can replace the dog food with a grain-free dog food. But evidently, I did see one flyer at my vet's office that some dogs don't do well on a grain-free diet, actually. A lot of people are yelling back at the podcast right now. But anyway, suffice to say that whole wheat flour is, I think, totally fine to feed your dog in moderate amounts. And the pups had a good time with it. And they know it's kind of weird, but as soon as the video camera I use, when you hit the start, the record button, it makes a little beep. And as soon as Charlie Pup hears that beep, she comes running into the kitchen.
Is that, what is that? What was that called? Who was the scientist who did the test with
Pavlovian
the dog?
Pavlovian response.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
So it's, you know, and then she just looks at me with those big Labrador eyes like, okay, where's the food? And I'm like, you got to wait. So, but they were a lot of fun and they seem to enjoy the treats. And it's a wicked simple recipe and it has blueberries and raspberries in it. So the irony is I was making it in the middle of winter. So the blueberries were from Ecuador or Brazil. So I'm holding this package in my hand and I'm thinking, what's the carbon footprint of this package of blueberries I'm about to use?
Did you use frozen or were they fresh ones?
They were fresh.
Fresh.
I imagine frozen ones have a lower carbon footprint than the fresh ones, but that's what they had at the grocery store. So, but they were good. One person made a comment that, I'll admit I ate one of the dog biscuits and I said, oh, this tastes like biscotti. And I kind of think that's what biscotti is.
Do you think if it had, I mean, I'm granted, I'm guessing the reason why it probably tasted kind of bland is there's no sugar in it other than the sugars that are inside of the raspberries and the blueberries.
Right.
So essentially you're just making a kind of plain tasting cookie.
Yeah. Cookie or cracker. I don't know what, you know, but this, and I added a little more water to it because the liquid of the berries and the raspberries wasn't quite enough for my ancient food processor, but it was wicked simple and it's kind of fun. I think it's a good thing to get your kids interested in cooking. You know, you're like, cause there's an instant gratification of feeding the dog treat to your dog and the dog's wagging his tail. And it kind of gets them interested in learning about food and cooking food in your house.
Well, you can't really mess it up either. I mean, it's one of those things where it's so basic and straightforward that you're almost guaranteed success.
Yeah. I have one. I made some, sweet potato chips for dogs. And I made one video and then I experimented and discovered a way to make them even better with a minimum amount of ingredients. And so I made a second video. So I will link to all that in the show notes here, but that's on the Garden Fork YouTube channel. So, and one of those is a pretty popular video of mine. So it's kind of fun to because those sweet potato chips in the store for your dogs are quite expensive for a bag of them. So I'm like, just slice up the chip. The key to that is, ideally, you're slicing each slice of the sweet potato relatively the same thickness. And that's kind of hard unless you're a chef or you have what's called a mandolin. And you got to be careful with the mandolin thing. So
that mandolin is very sharp, I'll tell you that. I've caught my knuckle on that thing coming down one time. And that was very painful.
Oh, I'm cringing. So I mentioned this last week, but the Garden Fork merchandise store is now up and running if you want your black sweatshirt, Will.
Yay. I sorry I sent you the text on that, but my wife was really excited. She's like, you could get a Garden Fork sweatshirt. Just like you need another hoodie. I'm like, perfect.
Yeah, and then the site broke. So
Eric broke the internet.
No, it's a, I think it's a human interface issue with the site Teespring, but there's some new designs coming. Well, for, you should buy one of these first, and then I'll put out some new ones. I'm trying to learn about, I've learned a bit about clothing and printing on it, actually. And there's the simple, like the sweatshirts and t-shirts I have are very simple because it's literally a rectangle on the front of the shirt. But if you want it on the back or on the sleeves, like I have a Carhartt long sleeve t-shirt and it says Carhartt in big letters up the side of the sleeve, right? And I think it'd be fun if it would say garden fork up the side of the sleeve. And so I'm learning how to do that within this this garment merchant that YouTube has teamed up with. But it's like a pattern. They give you a Illustrator, Adobe Illustrator pattern with the t-shirt or sweatshirt broken apart into the, all the different parts that are sewn together.
Really?
Yeah.
So you can just load in one image and then just kind of tweak it on each one of them, or how does that work?
Yeah, you kind of wrap it around each piece of cloth that's going to make up your shirt. And so I have a friend who's worked in the garment industry for years, and he knows how to make it all. So I was going to talk to him about it. I don't think the shirts will, or sweatshirts will be very cheap because they're pretty much custom made, but that would be kind of fun to have a shirt like that, I thought.
I will say one thing. I've had a dabble in the t-shirt business and the sweatshirt business because we had to produce merchandise for the resort property because people come and they want a sweatshirt that says, hey, I stayed at this resort and so on. And one of the things that was almost overwhelming was the guy shows up with about 15 catalogs, and each one of them is, you know, an inch thick. And there's 100 different styles and types and weights of shirts, like just polo shirts. I mean, there's like 80 just to choose from.
Right.
And it was almost overwhelming. And that's before you got into colors, because there's weights and styles. And is it, you know, what percentage cotton to nylon versus, you know, does it have a high collar, short collar? Is it got a pattern on it and so on? And the clothing part of it is challenging. I'm glad that you found somebody that kind of made a lot of that a lot simpler to, you know, do versus trying to figure that out from scratch, because we're still struggling with trying to figure out what next year's clothing is going to look like for the resort.
Which is called the Tiger Paw Resort, right? Is that what it's called? Bear Paw?
The Bear Paw Resort. Yep.
Yeah, I knew I'd mangle that. Bear Paw Resort in Northwest Wisconsin. So
we do have some spaces available. Shameless plug. May and August, we have cabins available. Everything else is booked 100% right now.
Nice. With what I like about the Teespring site that YouTube is paired up with is they have a regular quality t-shirt and then a premium quality t-shirt, and they have a regular hoodie and a premium quality hoodie. And I just think that the premium one's going to last longer. It's a thicker hoodie and it'll last longer. And same with the t-shirt. I buy t-shirts in bulk. You know, it's just so much easier than, I don't really like to pick out colors because it's just, I'm like, it's not worth my time. So
do you know where you notice the difference in the quality of a hoodie sweatshirt? And I can tell you from firsthand experience the difference. So we have hoodie sweatshirts for the resort, which were nice. And I was wearing it in, you know, early or late summer, early fall. And I usually wear my hoodies all the way into, you know, the winter time. Well, we got these hoodies for the resort and I had one on the other day. And normally with my other stuff, I just walk outside and the wind kicked up and it went right through the hoodie sweatshirt and it was freezing cold. The material is a good material. It's just there's a stitch count or something like that, where it's thicker versus thinner. They feel the same, but basically there was no resistance to wind or anything. So it just basically went right through the garment versus my other ones where they're heavier material and it doesn't go through. So that's kind of where you notice it is when you're in the stress of weather.
Thread count. I've learned a little bit about that. So, but my garment friend, I think I'm going to make him the expert.
Perfect.
If you guys have some ideas for designs, I was just going to use some of the phrases that I use in the show and life, you know, done is better than perfect is the first one. The other one, which I don't use a lot, but I want to, is just start. You know, I thought that would be good on a t-shirt because even now I think about doing things and I don't start them. You know, it's like if you just get started, the momentum will keep you going, I think. So
there's a desire to finish. It's a challenge to start, but there's a desire to finish. And once you start something, I have a hard time not finishing something. So it's one of those scenarios where if you just get going, take that first step, next thing you know, you're almost done.
Oh, that's a great way. Yeah. All right. So I imagine people are at their destination.
Definitely.
They're like sitting in the car, sipping on their coffee from their reusable cup, please. So
wondering when these two guys are going to be done yapping.
All right, so you can find Will at the Weekend Homestead on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And then there's the Bear Paw Resort where you can go see him in person.
Definitely. If you use the coupon code GardenFork, you get yourself a free glass of water at the bar.
All right, make it a great day, everyone, and we will see you next week. Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz. You can find more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. Our theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com. Other music used in the show is used under license from audioblocks.com.